Locked On NBA, the biggest stories, the local experts. Every Monday, we dig into the biggest stories across the NBA with our Locked On Podcast Network hosts. Today, we go to Oklahoma City to speak with Ryland Stiles of Locked On Thunder about what Oklahoma City could potentially be doing in the NBA draft. We also speak to Alex Wolf of Locked On Knicks about Team USA and their loss to France in the Olympic Games in Tokyo. And lastly, we go to Kane Pittman of Locked On Bucks for a local perspective on the Milwaukee Bucks winning the NBA championship. It's all coming up. The biggest stories, the local experts on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On NBA podcast for another week. I am your Monday host, Josh Lloyd. I'm also the host of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast, and I'm the lead analyst at basketballmonster.com and at Yahoo Sports Australia. The NBA season is done. The draft is just around the corner. The Olympic Games are on. We're going to touch on all of those things in today's show, which is brought to you by the Locked On Podcasts live NBA Draft Show. NBA Draft GOAT Chad Ford, Locked On NBA Draft host Rafael Barlow, and Locked On NBA host John Corrales will be live this year covering the NBA Draft. It's Locked On NBA Draft 2021, brought to you by Built Bar. Get the local expert analysis on each pick. Follow Locked On NBA on YouTube today and watch our live coverage on July 29th at 7 p.m. Eastern. Now, let's bring in the host of the Locked On Thunder podcast. Ryland Stiles is here. Ryland, welcome to Locked On NBA.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so the Oklahoma City Thunder, we know that they were, they're pretty aggressively tanking towards the end of the season, hoping to get a high pick. Unfortunately, lottery luck didn't go their way, and they now have pick number 6. They also have pick number 16 and pick number 18 in the first round, and there's a lot of talk, Ryland, about the Thunder being a team that's looking to move up into that top 4 or top 3. What's the sense that you get about the aggression that Sam Presti's going at this in terms of trying to move up from pick 6?
Well, Sam Presti's going to be extremely aggressive to try to move up. The problem is he can't do it alone. He's got to have somebody to play ball with him. And it's hard to find the team that is going to be willing to play ball with the Thunder, even though Sam Presti will be very, very aggressive. He wants it there. And whenever he wants something, he usually gets it. The problem is, though, at 6, the lottery really screwed the Thunder in a lot of ways, because not only do they not get the top pick, but even with their future assets, how valuable can they be if you cannot deliver somebody a top player that they want in return with the package? So it'll be very tough, but the Thunder are trying very hard.
So what's the most likely scenario at the moment? Obviously, they'd be looking to include 16 and 18. They've got a bevy of future picks. Are they targeting pick 3? We hear the Cavs are in a lot of discussions to move that selection. Are they targeting the Magic at 5? Are they targeting the Raptors at 4? Like, how high up do they want to move?
Well, there's been reports about trying with Houston at 2. I don't see that. Trying with Detroit at 1, I don't see that either. It seems like the Cavs probably want to keep their pick or move up. So at that point, for me, the most realistic thing is you take James Bouknight at 6, and then you try to move up from 16 and 18. There are reports that the Thunder do not feel comfortable taking 3 guaranteed rookies into next year. I don't know how legitimate that could be, because if your goal is to lose games next year, the best way to do that is with young players who are very inexperienced and cannot really close out games. So I'm not sure how they really feel about all 3 rookies, but to me, the most realistic option is you take Bouknight at 6, and then you move up back into the top 10 or top 12 while taking on a bad contract in the latter half of the draft with 16 and 18. And then you walk with 2 guaranteed rookies, and then whatever you end up with in the second round, and then you have 3 picks right now going into it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't really see why they wouldn't take in 3 guaranteed rookies. Like, they're not trying to win games next year. That gives them development. You don't have to, like, guarantee all your rookies 30 minutes a game. Like, these guys can play in the G League if necessary. They can be the 10th, the 11th man. These later picks, I don't really see why you'd be so hesitant to bring those guys in. But you do bring me to an interesting point. Yeah, a lot of talk about this draft, people saying that it's a 5-man draft, and that fifth man seems to have changed a little bit, and a lot of people talking that the Thunder really get things cracking for us at pick number 6, because that's where stuff can go off the board. Now, we assume that we have Cunningham, Green, Mobley, Suggs as the top 4. It appears that Scotty Barnes is going to be pick 5, and then the Thunder have that wild selection. Now, you've mentioned this guy's name twice already, James Bouknight. So you think that's the direction they're going? Because there is Jonathan Kuminga, There is Moses Moody. There is a bevy of players who could be available there at number six. So, you know, what's the thought here on book night that you've mentioned a couple of times? Is that something that the Thunder have not leaked out, but you're hearing that as an option? Like, is there a lot of indecision about which direction they're going?
I'll put it to you this way. If Scotty Barnes is not there at six, I'd be stunned if the Thunder did not take James Book Knight. They liked him last year before he pulled his name out of the draft. They like him again this year, obviously. And I think that he's a more realistic developmental plan than Jonathan Kuminga. Kuminga has a higher ceiling, but the plan to get him to that ceiling might be a bit tougher than Book Knight. And Book Knight checks a ton of boxes, almost all of them, when you're looking for somebody to go with Shea and to co-star with Shea long-term. They like him. It's been reported heavily by Kevin O'Connor, by every draft expert, that the Thunder like him. Again, liked him last year as well. Without Scottie Barnes on the board, I'd be very stunned if it was not the pick at James Book Knight. He's a very good player. I think that's the right decision to make for the Thunder and Sam Presti. As much as I like Kuminga, I think that Book Knight has a better path to becoming that co-star for Shea, and I'd take him comfortably at six.
Okay, there's no way that I would take him at six, but that's interesting that you're hearing that. Like, again, this draft is quite interesting because I reckon after probably the top four, there's like 15 guys who are very, very similar in my opinion. And yeah, some of that is eye of the beholder, that's fit, that's workouts, that's all that sort of stuff. In terms of working that out, is there any thought or any discussion of the Thunder maybe going, okay, well, we want Book Knight, but you know, maybe if we trade down, he's not going to go at seven or eight or nine. Is there any thought of, you know, more? We know Sam Presti loves accumulating assets and accumulating draft picks. Has there been any talk of, you know, moving down and still being able to get Book Knight?
Yeah, Sam's going to evaluate every option as he always does. If I think that a trade like that would be, if it's like Trae Young and Luka Doncic, where I'm guaranteed to get James Book Knight, you're guaranteed to get your player, and in the process, the Thunder pick up another player or another asset. I think that's the kind of the only way that they trade down. They wouldn't just trade down blindly and hope that Book Knight lands there. They do it with the knowledge that Book Knight's going to be there. Because whenever Presti targets this guy, he gets this guy. He traded up last year for Pokuševski, a player that most people not have traded up for. And you can see if you believe the Maverick smoke train that they threw out there to try to get an advantage from it, but they did trade up for Pokuševski because Sam loved Pokuševski, and that was his guy, for better or worse. And so with Book Knight, I think that he just have a guarantee he's going to get that guy to trade down. But it is on the table. Just having that guarantee to get him, that will be a big deal.
In terms of, you know, the other picks, because they've got a bunch of second round picks as well, is there any talk? Because they are a team that is consistently active. We've already seen the Al Horford Kemba Walker deal. Is there anything that's being talked about for other deals? Is Kemba someone that is likely to stay with the Thunder through this season? Is there any been talk of packaging him for more draft picks? Like, what is the Thunder doing? Because they are one of the teams that is most likely to be, you know, one of the more active teams through this NBA draft process. So is there any talk about moving Kemba further on, or what else they're doing with picks?
Much like trading up in this draft, they're trying to trade Kemba Walker as soon as possible. But it takes a team wanting Kemba Walker. They're not just going to trade him and a first-round pick like the Celtics did to get off of his contract. They're comfortable taking him in next year. They have all the cap space in the world. They can take on a couple more bad contracts and keep Kemba Walker. The money is no factor. They'd rather wait until the deadline or wait until the offseason to try to rehabilitate him some. Now, if they get a good offer, they're trying to move him as soon as possible. Just, I don't see that being an option right now. I don't see a team investing in Kemba Walker anything without the Thunder giving something up. And they're just not in the process of doing that right now. They're not in the mindset of doing that right now. So, yes, Kemba's available. They're trying, but the partner's very hard to find. You could see the Thunder doing anything in this draft, moving down from six if they can guarantee themselves the guy that they want, and especially moving up from 16 and 18. What's the value on those packages? We even saw a report where the Hawks might not want to pay Cam Reddish. So, can you get a guy like Cam Reddish for pick 16 or 18 plus something? There's going to be a bevy of options, including the Thunder, with all their cap space and all of their assets for the future in the terms of draft picks, getting involved like the Cavs did in a massive trade that goes down. If there's some sort of Bradley Beal trade for some reason, if that happens, can the Thunder swoop in and pick up a guy like Jared Allen and get a flyer player for a heavily protected first round pick to help facilitate a trade and allow a trade to go through? The Thunder have the assets in terms of salary and draft picks to allow that to happen. So they're going to be involved in every rumor, I think, from now to the end of the offseason.
Yeah, that's why they are one of the most intriguing teams over the next week, especially heading into the NBA draft. Ryland, you're going to have all of the Thunder news covered for us over on Locked On Thunder. So thank you for coming on Locked On NBA with me, and people can check you out over on Locked On Thunder.
Thanks for having me.
Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever. Did you know that Built Bar has so many delicious flavors? There's something for everybody. When you talk to a Built Bar fan, they're definitely passionate about their favorite. So you need to decide what your favorite is. And if you don't know the Built Bar flavors, well, they got coconut, they got cherry barcia, in fact, raspberry, mint brownie, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream. And if you don't know that favorite flavor, grab yourself a mixed box because you get to try all of those flavors in one box. And not only are Built Bar flavors the best tasting, they're healthy too. Check out the macros, 17 to 18 grams of protein, calories ranging from 130 to 180, only 4 to 5 grams of sugar and just 4 to 5 grams of net carbs. Amazing flavors, all tasty and all healthy. And Built Bar is also the official protein bar of the US track and field team. Go to built.com and use the promo code LOCKED15 and you'll get 15% off your order. The promo code is LOCKED15 for 15% off at built.com. Okay, so let's bring in Alex Wolf, who is the host of the Locked On Knicks podcast. Alex, welcome to Locked On NBA.
Thanks, Josh. Yeah, it's great to be back, man. Haven't been on the big show for a minute since the Knicks got knocked out of the playoffs. So it's good to be making an appearance again.
So let's talk about something that isn't the Knicks here, and let's talk about Team USA, because the first game for Team USA at the Olympics happened, I don't know, about 12 hours or so ago now at the time that we're recording. They went up against France, and it wasn't particularly good. I think that's fair to say. They lose 83-76. That's the final score. Because sometimes finding these international box scores is not particularly easy, as we've discussed already. They lose that game, Alex. Let's start with the basic question. Is the USA still, or should they still be considered the gold medal favorite here in the Olympics?
I mean, I guess so. You know, like, based on talent alone, they should be, right? You know, I still think, so I tweeted earlier today, you know, I think the U.S. has kind of come to this realization through the last FIBAs and now in the Olympics that they can't really just roll in with a squad of, you know, however many NBA guys and treat this like pickup basketball anymore and expect to just like crush and go to a win. Like the talent level has gotten higher around the world. A lot of these world teams, they practice a lot more together. They treat this like more of a, I guess, more of a privilege than something that they're begrudgingly accepting. You know, it seems like it's not something that a lot, at least not in the last few years, that a lot of guys on Team USA have been super proud to, you know, do and to, you know, put on for their country, sort of. Whereas a lot of these guys on the other teams have years and years of chemistry together because they always play together on the international teams. So to roundabout answer your question, I mean, I guess you could maybe start putting some teams maybe on equal footing with the US. I do think that if they find that gear and find themselves and find, you know, a coherent system and kind of commit to doing something, that they could still win the gold. But if they look like they've looked in these exhibition games this year and like they did in this first game against France, I mean, they were kind of a mess. I don't really know what it was that they were attempting to do, but they clearly did not succeed in achieving it.
Yeah, and the thing you mentioned there about chemistry is correct, because most of these other teams, these international squads, they have played together with the same lineup and the similar rotation for years, 4 years, 8 years, 6 years, whatever it is. Like these, you play France and you know you're going to have Batum and Gobert and Fournier and Dekolo, and you're going to have Luau Cabro, and you're going to have these guys playing, and you play Australia and you know it's going to be Mills and it's going to be Ingles and it's going to be Dellavedova and it's going to be Baines and it's going to be these same guys, and Rubio is going to be out there for Spain, and all of these same players are going to be playing for these teams consistently, whereas the US, yeah, they just throw different guys in. So Zach LaVine and Bam Adebayo are starting, and other times LeBron would have been a starter, and you have so many different guys moving in or out. And I think that is a part of it, and we're seeing that again, that you can't just throw together players who are all these high usage stars and expect it all to work. And the USA did sort of, I guess, try to change that around by bringing guys like Jeremy Grant, Keldon Johnson, JaVale McGee, but then they didn't even play Jeremy Grant in this game. So there is still, you know, things to be worked out, but the thing that stands out the most when we talk about being favorite for gold medals, I think they still are, but again, They're losing too many games to be say that they're just outright clear favorites. But Kevin Durant's not going to be one of six from three. He's not going to have five fouls and have score only 10 points in most of these games. So we can expect a better performance there. We can expect a better performance from Damian Lillard. But it's not going to be, I think it's fair to say, Alex, it's not going to be the cakewalk that it has been in previous years.
No, yeah, certainly not. I mean, and I would almost even push back a little bit on the Durant thing too. And, you know, maybe say like Durant, Draymond Green, Bam Adebayo. I mean, I think those guys can expect to be in a decent amount of foul trouble in these Olympics because the U.S. just didn't really bring a lot of size with them. You know, they didn't. We saw that in this game against France, right? Like, guys that, you know, Rudy Gobert, obviously, you know, multiple time defensive player of the year, deservedly so. He's a fantastic defensive player. But there's I struggle to even remember his first name. Is it Mustafa Fall? The one center off the bench, yeah, for France.
Pretty sure that's his name.
And Vincent Poirier, who's barely an NBA player. I mean, they were throwing out two big lineups, you know, against the U.S. And that was one of the things that really led to that huge third quarter run by France was they threw out this two big lineup where they were essentially playing two, you know, centers. And because of this international style of play and everything else, it didn't, you know, in the NBA, that would be a death sentence. In this tournament, you know, that was something that really flummoxed the U.S. and, you know, helped get some of their guys in foul trouble and helped France kind of establish this position where they said, okay, beat us from three, you know, and if you can't beat us from three, you're not going to get a single thing on the inside. And I don't know what it is with, you know, international competition, but I always seem to notice this, particularly in the Olympics, although maybe that's just most of when I watch international competition, but the rims always seem, I don't know. It sounds weird, but they somehow seem softer and more bouncy. I mean, I don't know what it is, but maybe it's just that the ball feels different to the guys from the NBA, but something about it, like their three-point shot just doesn't seem to drop quite as well, and especially in this game. I mean, they did have a number of good looks from three and just couldn't seem to find the range with them. So I don't know. There's a lot of different things at play here, but one thing that was made even more abundant today, which we kind of knew already, you know, going into things based off how the exhibitions went, is this team was kind of built like a 2K roster and not so much like a team that took into account, you know, positional versatility and positional needs and stuff like that, because there just really is not enough bigs on this team when Team USA historically has carried like four or five like true power forward centers on the roster. And they just don't have that this year. They do not have size on their side, and it's going to be like a really huge thing for them to overcome during these Olympic games.
I think part of that is that you look at the NBA big men, that all of the good big men are not American. So you know, it's Gobert, it's Embiid, it's Jokic. So they're all, none of those are American. Karl Anthony Towns is not American. Like, how far down the list do you have to go to find the best? Yeah, American center. Yeah, Bam is probably it, and he's there as their starting center. But then where else do you go? Like, so many of these centers, you know, Yusuf Nurkic, another, yeah, pretty high-level center that's not American. Like, there are plenty of them as you go through. Clint Capella, not American. Like, all of these guys that we go through, the Americans producing centers. Obviously, Anthony Davis would make a big difference if he was here playing, but he's not. But, you know, American centers in general, they are not at the level of international big men. And that is what I think opposing teams and opposing nations are going to be trying to able to exploit throughout this Tokyo competition. Now, I think we also have to acknowledge, though, Alex, that, you know, the fact that Chris Middleton, Devin Booker, Drew Holiday you know, just arrived, what, yesterday? I think before this game, or a couple of days before, you know, Booker scored 4 points on one of six shooting. Middleton went scoreless, only took two shots and did nothing. Drew Holiday took plenty of shots, and he was pretty solid coming off the bench. But those guys aren't going to be feeling particularly fresh after the NBA final. So there is that part of it. And we do expect the US to get better. And France is a top-tier opponent, and they might be able to work themselves into some form against some other opponents. But this is, again, not the absolute straightforward competition that we have seen in the past. And I think that Americans, Alex, should be prepared for a chance that they don't win the gold medal here. And I think that is something that it's not going to be seen as a complete embarrassment because of the quality of these other teams, but it is something that people need to be prepared for.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that there's a really decent chance that we see a 2004-esque result. You know, maybe they end up with a bronze. I think it's even possible that we see a 2019 FIBA's result where they just don't medal at all. I think that team finished seventh or something. I mean, it was not pretty at all. You know, and to your point too, like, yeah, like Booker and Holiday and Middleton came in, and I don't think Middleton played a minute, if I'm not mistaken.
No, he did. He took two shots and missed them.
Okay, my mistake. Yeah, so it was very forgettable couple minutes then in that case. But I mean, Drew Holiday, for what it's worth, was like the only reason that this team had a chance at winning this game today. It's like he had the championship glow on him. So yeah, it's bizarre though. I mean, it is. I honestly, and I mean, I guess this again speaks to that. How dedicated are these guys to playing for Team USA? The fact that the US couldn't find replacements for three guys that just played in the finals. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see any reason why those three guys should have played, you know, and it's kind of unfair to them. You know, I feel like I know they want to represent the US and everything, and that's great, but you would have thought that they could have maybe found some replacements and been like, hey, you know, you guys shouldn't have to travel to Tokyo from Milwaukee, you know, the day after winning a championship to come here and play for Team USA and, you know, continue tiring yourself out after just going through a long and grueling NBA postseason after a shortened and grueling season. So yeah, I don't know. It's really bizarre. Now there's already stuff coming out about how some of the players on the team are complaining that Pop is running like the San Antonio offense for these guys. And I don't know why that would be a bad thing. That's an offense that won like a lot of NBA championships. So, you know, whatever, I guess you could be upset about that if you want to, but I don't know. Just something feels off about this team. You know, as someone I've watched a good amount of USA basketball over the years. You know, I would say the first team that I really like got into it with, like, was obviously the Redeem team, which is probably a lot of people's like, in my age brackets, first Team USA that they really, really cared about. And, you know, ever since then, it's kind of been like, you know, the U.S. puts together this like really decorated group of guys that they bring to the Olympics. And this year, I mean, whether it's just disinterest, whether part of it was COVID concerns, maybe, they just don't seem to have the roster like what they used to have. But then B, there just doesn't seem to be that same like verve about this team. You know what I mean? There isn't that swagger. There isn't that, you know, feeling that they're the best and that they should be the best and that they should win this thing. It's just, I don't know. They seem like kind of a broken team to me at this moment, at least based off of, you know, how the exhibitions went and how this first game went. So it's a pretty ugly scene for Team USA. So yeah, I mean, if you're pulling real hard for Team USA this year, I would say definitely brace yourself for at least the possibility of, you know, a bronze medal perhaps, or perhaps even no medal, just with how they've played so far versus how well some of these other teams around the world have played.
It's going to be really interesting to see how it all pans out. Of course, we'll cover USA basketball here on Locked On NBA, but any Knicks stuff that you're after, Alex will have for us over on Locked On Knicks. Alex, thanks for coming on Locked On NBA and talking about Team USA with me.
Oh, of course. And I just want to real quick say that Julius Randle maybe could have influenced this, but they took Kelvin Johnson instead.
That is potentially true. Thank you, Alex.
Thank you.
BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing and you can track all of that action at BetOnline. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all of your sporting needs. So before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and check out all of the great sporting news, sign up bonuses, and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prep for their runs to the playoffs. Head to the website betonline.ag or use your mobile device to sign up today using our promo code LOCKEDON and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline are your online sportsbook experts.
All right, so let's bring him in now. The great man, Kane Pittman, is here with me to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. He is, of course, the host of the Locked On Bucks podcast. Kane, Now, we have spoken about, or not me personally, but others on the Locked On NBA podcast have spoken about Milwaukee winning the championship naturally, but we haven't got a local perspective. And unfortunately, you are sitting in a beautiful apartment, not in Milwaukee, but in Melbourne. But you know people in Milwaukee. You've been living in Milwaukee for years. What does this first NBA championship in 50 years for the Milwaukee Bucks mean locally for that Milwaukee community?
Yeah, I'll say, first of all, if you had have asked me what I would be doing at the moment that the Bucks won a championship, it probably wouldn't have been sitting in my living room by myself in Melbourne watching the game. So that was perhaps a little bit of a letdown from my own selfish perspective. But the city itself, I think everyone saw the amount of people that turned up. Now, I do think there was some general excitement for people to gather again and get behind a sporting team, given everything else that has happened. But I also think the journey of this Milwaukee team, from the failures in 2019, getting so close to the NBA Finals, and then the complete disaster in the bubble. Is Giannis going to leave? The external pressure that Giannis is about to walk out the door from the franchise, all the question marks over Mike Budenholzer. I think what we saw with the celebrations from not only the team but the fans was the culmination of all that pressure that felt like it was mounting on this team, finally being realized that they were the NBA champions, and they'll be able to hold that forever. And it just feels like, as a franchise, they were able to withstand a lot of adversity to get there.
Yeah, look, everyone's going to come out here and say, well, you know, if KD's foot wasn't on the line, then we wouldn't even be having this discussion. But in the end, that I'm sure no Bucks fan gives a single shit about that at all. They are the NBA champions, the rightful NBA championship holders. And Kane, one thing that, again, doesn't get mentioned is Giannis was dealing with a significant knee injury. Like, I didn't know that he'd be able to play in game one. I didn't think he'd be at 100%. Instead, he goes out there and drops multiple 40 bombs, has a 50-point game in the sealer, plays amazing defense, and it was like that knee injury didn't happen. And they didn't have Dante DiVincenzo, one of their key members on a team that did not have much depth at all. He was out for basically the whole playoff. So they didn't do it through zero adversity. They had tons of issues going against them. So I think that needs to be, if we're going to say, oh, what about injuries and foot on the line, like, the Bucks had their bunch of stuff that they had to go through to get there as well.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think the DiVincenzo injury was one of the most overlooked aspects of the postseason with all the contenders, when you consider he was a starter from opening night. And I think everyone understood, when the Bucks went all in to Drew Holiday and made the moves that they made, that they were sacrificing depth and they wanted to have a stronger top end, which is all great. That's what most championship contenders do. But then you see, when you have those injuries, all of a sudden you get to a postseason or an NBA Finals where you're like, okay, well, we're only playing seven guys right now. And that's where the Bucks essentially were come the finals. But as far as Giannis goes, we had a number of our listeners on Locked On Bucks reach out to us and say, I went back and listened to the podcast you guys did after game four against Atlanta, when the series was 2-2. Giannis had just gone down. And I don't think it could be any lower than that in terms of what you thought was going to happen for the Bucks moving forward. And we actually spent that entire podcast not discussing the series. The result of the series almost felt irrelevant. We were very concerned about what this meant for the 2022 season. And was he going to be able to play? And then what does the franchise do? They're going to be right up against the salary cap or over the cap. And then maybe they have a superstar that doesn't play for a year. So to go from that low point to all of a sudden him being back, and not just being back, being really better than ever, having 50 points in a closeout game in an NBA championship is just, it's absolutely absurd. I don't even know how to describe it.
Yeah, it was, look, again, we lose perspective of that we didn't know who was going to play in game one, and he's out here with 40-40 and 50 in three of the last four games of the series with, you know, huge blocks, and it does get a little bit swept under the rug. But that's not what we're going to look for moving forward. We're fine with Giannis's health now moving forward. We know that he did it, you know, his way, staying with a small market team, which I just hate that term. I hate that designation, so I apologize for bringing it up. But he signed. He didn't leave, despite ESPN doing their best efforts to try and, you know, make him leave. He stayed there. We know that part. But now what happens? Because two key parts of that, you said, seven-man rotation. PJ Tucker, he's a free agent. Bobby Portis is probably going to be declining his player option. So, you know, are we expecting these guys back? Are we expecting the Bucks to run back this same squad? They're not favorites to be the back-to-back champions. The Nets have been installed as favorites so far. So what does Milwaukee do in this offseason?
Yeah, there's a couple of things they'll be looking at. You mentioned the two key pieces with PJ Tucker and Bobby Portis. And Tucker, for a mid-season trade for a contender, what you hope to get out of him, I think PJ Tucker absolutely filled that role. And you look at what he did in the Brooklyn series for sure, defending Kevin Durant and just being that physical presence, that veteran. I think they got what they wanted out of him. Now, I'm sure that they would be happy for him to come back. But if PJ Tucker looks at this and says, I'm 36, I want a couple of years on decent money, then the reality is he might not be back in Milwaukee. I think that that's fair to say. There was an article he did with The Athletic where he kind of hinted at the fact that, yeah, I mean, he's looking to get rewarded. He hasn't really been paid in a big way throughout his career. So Tucker might be the one that's out. Bobby Portis, we'll see. With Bobby, you got to ask the question, maybe he loves being the hero of Milwaukee. Maybe he doesn't want to leave. Is he going to get the Bobby chance elsewhere? We'll see. I do expect that he is going to opt out. It'll just be whether the Bucks can rearrange some finances there to have him happy and bring him back. I'm sure they would love to. I think the other big need they need is a backup point guard. I mean, we saw Jeff Teague playing minutes in game 6 of the NBA Finals. They signed DJ Augustine in the offseason. That didn't work out. It was miraculous that they were able to flip that contract to get PJ Tucker back. But I do think a veteran point guard is certainly one of the big priorities. We saw with the injury to Dante DiVincenzo, they lacked ball handling, which was why Teague had to play. The status for DiVincenzo for the start of next season is up in the air. We suspect that he might miss a little bit of time. So I would say some more ball handling for sure.
Next question is, we talked to Giannis, I probably should have put this a little bit earlier, but you know, the debate then comes that about Giannis and people, I guess there's a certain level of disrespect towards his accomplishments and how good he is. Now, I know what you're going to say here, but yeah, Giannis is a top 5 player in the NBA. I think it's pretty clear, but there are plenty of people who would disagree with that. So give us your, not impassioned plea, because you don't need to plead for the bloke who's a back-to-back MVP, defensive player of the year, NBA champion, finals MVP. But you know, why is it maybe more to the point that he's not universally considered that?
Well, he's not a jump shooter. And I think we've seen that over the course of the last probably decade, that I think in general, people associate the best players in the league with guys that can hit a jump shot. I mean, that's honestly what it feels like to me, because I don't think you can question Giannis now when you go through his resume. You already listed off all the achievements that he already has. He's only 26. This guy isn't going to turn 27 until into the next season, which is absolutely ridiculous. He's won a title earlier than a lot of the all-time greats. So his trajectory is heading in a ridiculous path. And now that he has won the title, and now that he has won the finals MVP, and even through this postseason run, you already mentioned some of the media outlets that were trying to say, oh, Chris Middleton's the best player in this team. Chris Middleton's the finals MVP. And then he dropped 50 and two other 40-point games in the NBA Finals. They're out of excuses. There's nothing you can say. We all sat here and watched it. He's a top 5 player. You can say he's top 3. You can say he's top 1, whatever you want. But they're out of excuses now. There's nothing they can say.
I'm guessing you're saying that he's maybe more of a Batman than a Robin Kane. Perhaps that's where we're going.
Carry on.
All right, that'll do it for us today, Kane. Thank you for coming on and speaking from a local perspective on the Bucks. Of course, you can hear all of Kane's takes over on Locked On Bucks throughout the week and over on his Twitter feed at Kane Pittman. Kane, thank you for coming on.
Anytime, man. Thank you.
So that'll do it for today's episode of Locked On NBA. Don't forget to follow this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, and on the Odyssey app. And of course, we're now on YouTube. So go and find Locked On NBA on YouTube. Subscribe to us, hit the notification bell, give it thumbs up, leave comments as well. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.